Okay, we made it to segment five. This is not as even half as long as the other two segments. I know I'm hearing a lot of thank you. I'm trying to complete subjects as we go, and this is a whole entity in itself. It's dealing with Saul and the woman of Endor. So we're going to look at the demise of Saul, and we start in 1 Samuel 28, because basically David says, he'll get his. Leave him alone. It's going to happen. The guy's getting worse and worse, you know. Something's going to happen.
The desolation of Saul.
Right. Ooh, the desolation of Saul. I like that. Yeah, that's good. All right, 1 Samuel 28, 3. Now Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him, and they buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits, and he put the wizards, no more Harry Potter, out of the land. Samuel had tried when he was alive to get through to Saul, but had failed. So he just stopped communicating with him altogether. Wouldn't answer his text, never, you know, answered email, anything. So, 28:4. And the Philistines gathered themselves together, and they came and pitched in Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gibeah. And when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart greatly trembled. And when Saul inquired of the Lord answered him not. Not by dreams, not by Urim, not by the prophets, not by, you know, celestial motions. Saul had lost all communications with the true God. Although Saul tried, his efforts could not restore the lost communication. Thus, in desperation, after having put away all those who had familiar spirits, Saul demands a personal audience with such a person. In Leviticus, it lays out quite a number of things to avoid, the spiritual practices which are of the devil, and having a familiar spirit is one of them. They're all over the place today, you know, but people who communicate with the dead about your relatives and past things that happened in your life. You never hear about any of that. Oh, they have TV shows about it. All right, so 28:7. Then said Saul to his servants, seek me a woman that has a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said unto him, I just happens to be this one with a familiar spirit in Endor. Gee, I wonder how they knew. Well, why not? Devil spirits have been influencing Saul's life for many, many years anyway. Where did the thought to do this come from? Having lost his connection with God through disobedience to God's word, Saul grasped for suggestions from Satan. Satan puts ideas into Saul's mind because he knew that he could influence Saul through a familiar spirit and not only cause his death, but the death of Saul's sons, the destruction of the army of Israel, and misfortune to an entire nation. Well, that's all. No, yeah, exactly. No biggie. All right. 28:8. And Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment, and he went, and two men went with him, and they came to the woman by night. Well, that'll change everything. And he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit, and bring me him up whom I shall name unto thee. Okay, now, just a couple points of interest here. Saul is head and shoulders taller than anybody in the kingdom. Oh, but if he comes by night, it's okay. You won't recognize him. Exactly. Look, if Shaquille O'Neal walked in here, oh, look, a big, large, you know, okay. All right. You know, even if Manute Bol walked in here, we would understand, you know. He was 7'5". So, he'd be easy to recognize. Now, this woman had access to the Spirit, but that Spirit also had access to her. All right. And the woman said unto him, behold, thou knowest what Saul has done, how he has cut off those that have familiar spirits and the wizards. He put them all out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. There's only one person in the entire kingdom that could make that promise. Hello? And that would be the king. Point two that she's missing here. Verse 11. Then said the woman, "Whom shall I bring up unto thee? If perhaps I really do have a familiar spirit, who do you want to talk to?" He said, "Bring me up Samuel." So she gets out her little crystal ball, and she probably looked into the liver. Maybe the tea leaves? There's a number of different ways they would call up a familiar spirit. So this would be something like a crystal ball type thing, except they didn't have it quite as nice. All right, so when the woman saw Samuel, bring me up Samuel. The woman saw Samuel. She cried with a loud voice, and the woman spake to Saul, "Why have you deceived me? For you're Saul." Okay. She was stupider than stupid until the Spirit came in. Those who dabble in spiritual matters like these will digress in how they look, how they dress, how they react, and just overall life. You'll just see their life get worse and worse and worse. Once the Spirit is in control of her, she becomes extremely aware of what's going on around her. There's a certain prize fighter who's a bumbling idiot today. But as soon as that Spirit pops in, he's as sharp and he can talk fluently and everything else. And he's the most highly respected athlete of all time right now.
Jeez,
28:13. And the king said unto her, "Be not afraid. What'd you see?" And the woman said, "I saw gods ascending out of the earth." Hey, she saw something, all right. The familiar spirit showed her a vision of Samuel and other things to make her feel like it was all real. And he said unto her, "What form is he of?" She said, "He's an old man cometh up, and he's covered with a mantle." And Saul perceived that it really was Samuel, he thought. And he stooped with his face to the ground, and he bowed himself. Hey, he never bowed to Samuel when he was alive. Now, does a familiar spirit know what Samuel looked like? Yeah, he's familiar with him. Did it know Samuel's voice? Did it know Samuel's quirks? Right? Did you know that Samuel really loved country music? No, I don't know that. But Samuel never came to see him while he was alive. Why would he come to see him if he was already in heaven, having a great time up there? You know? Yeah, right. And that's what I got in my note. Is he too bored in heaven? And so now he has to come see Saul now? All right. 28:15. And Samuel said to Saul, "Why hast thou disquieted me?" "What are you bothering me for, son?" That's what he's saying. "To bring me up." Saul answered, "I'm so distressed. The Philistines are making war against me. God has departed from me. He answers me no more, neither by the prophets nor by the dreams. Therefore, I've called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do." Then said Samuel, "Wherefore then dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord has departed from thee?" Remember, I represented the Lord. "And if the Lord's become your enemy, hello, let's put this together, Saul." Saul knew Samuel knew this. And the devil spirits knew all of this too. There's nothing new here. All right, 17. "And the Lord hath done to him, and he spake by me, for the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thy hand and given it to thy neighbor." And by now you figured out that it's David. "Because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore has the Lord done this thing unto thee this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow shall you and your sons be with me. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hands of the Philistines." That's not quite what he really wanted to hear, I'm sure. The only information here that's new was Saul's impending death. Everything else is already new. And, who has the power of death anyway? Hebrews 2:14. What does it say, Timothy?
"For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil."
All right, verse 20. "Then Saul fell straightway all along on the earth, and he was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all that day or all night. He hadn't had any food. They didn't even stop at Taco Bell on the way over. The impersonating spirit speaking through the woman, utilizing Samuel's voice, had delivered a message that had so scared Saul that he faints from fear. Anything that has been manifest in the senses world is accessible to Satan's knowledge. All the salient facts listed here were well known to Satan. The seance with the woman of Endor is only the climax of the deceiving power of Satan, working through a woman who is possessed and controlled by a familiar spirit. These evil spirits are called familiar because they are well acquainted with all that has happened in a person's earthly life in the senses world. That's why, I went back into a former life. Well, the spirit was around with somebody else in a former life. So it's real easy to say these things. All right. Saul, Satan always produces a counterfeit, never a genuine. Satan's deceit can often be very effective if one is not schooled properly in this realm. Satan can imitate and counterfeit anything as long as he is familiar with the original. Satan has access to the knowledge of everything that a man did while on earth. He knew all about Samuel, what he looked like, how he dressed, what his voice sounded like, what his mannerisms were, what he actually had said and done. I think the movie Ghost with Whoopi Goldberg is one of the closest counterfeits of how devil spirits operate. That one really depicts it very well. So I don't know who wrote it, but they were well connected. 1 Samuel 28:21. And the woman came unto Saul and saw that he was sore troubled. And she said unto him, Behold, thy handmaid has obeyed thy voice, and I put my life in my hand, and have hearkened unto thy words which thou spoken unto me. Now, therefore, I pray thee, hearken thou also unto the voice of thy handmaid, and let me set a morsel of bread before thee and eat, that thou mayest have strength when thou goest on thy way. But he refused and said, I will not eat. But his servants, together with the woman, compelled him. The power of God. No, I'm sorry, wrong compelled him. And he hath hearkened unto his voice. So he arose from the earth and sat upon the bed. And the woman had a fat calf in the house. And she hasted and killed it and took flour, kneaded it. I mean, this takes a little bit of time. She just didn't call up Jimmy John's, you know? And did bake unleavened bread thereof. And she brought it before Saul and before his servants, and they ate. Then they arose up and went away that night. Now, there would have been a covenant assault in the eating of that food together. This protected the woman because she had a covenant assault with Saul that he would not touch her. But on the other hand, it also sealed his fate as far as he was concerned. Him eating sealed the fact that he was going to die, because it was a salt covenant with what she had said too. All right, let's see what comes to pass. 1 Samuel 30, verse 1 in our Bible. And it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag, and smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken the women captives that were therein. They slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. And David and his men came to the city. All right, here's what's going on. David had made Ziklag his home. While him and the warriors were out warrioring, being good Vikings or something, you know, while they were out doing that, the enemy had come in and had plundered the city and took all their wives and children and all their stuff and had run away with it. So here comes David and his men on their horses back into town, and the whole place was on fire and everybody was gone. Ouch. All right. All the women were captive, but they didn't slew anybody. They just took them all captive. So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burnt with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with them lifted up their voice and wept until they had no power to weep. And David's two wives were taken captive, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And David was greatly distressed. He was the man in charge. He's the one who ordered these guys to go do what they did and left the city unprotected. So here's the people. What are they going to do? The people spake of stoning David, because the soul of all the people were grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. And David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. And Abimelech brought thither the ephod to David. All right. David is not rushing off in a frenzy. He is taking the time to inquire of God. He has to be able to face God's answer, even if God would say, don't go, all of them are lost. He's going to ask God what he should do, and God may say, nothing we can do. This is a big moment in David's life again. The people want to stone him. You're the one, you're the one that took us away from all this. You should have known what was going on. What's wrong with you, David? Stone him. Our wives are gone. Our children are gone. All of our video machines are gone. I mean, you took everything. But he goes to God. And now he has to abide on what God tells him. Chapter 30, verse 8. And David inquired at the Lord and said, shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake him? And he answered him, pursue. For thou shalt surely overtake them, or thou fail recover all. Yeah! absolutely! David got the information that he needed from the true God. So David went, him and the 600 men that were with him. And they came to the brook Bezor, where those that were left behind stayed. But David pursued, he and 400 men. For 200 abode behind, which were so faint that they could not go over the brook Bezor. All right. He had just fought a big battle. He's coming back afterwards, and they find the whole place has been wiped out. They cry, they mourn, they pull their hair out, everything's going on. Then, let's go get them. And they make it this far to the brook, and 200 of them say, I just can't go any further. We just can't do it. So the 400 of them continue to go, go to ford the river and keep moving. And they found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David and gave him bread. And he did eat, and they made him drink water. And they gave him a piece of a cake of figs. Ooh, they gave him a fig Newton. And two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit came again to him, for he had eaten no bread nor drank any water 3 days and 3 nights. And David said unto him, to whom belongest thou, and whence are they? And he said, I am a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite, and my master left me because 3 days ago I fell sick. We made an division upon the south of the Cherethites, and upon the coast which belongs to Judah, and upon the south of Caleb, and we burned Ziglag with fire. Well, that picked David's ears up real quick. Okay, I love it. They just happened to find this Egyptian who happened to be there to give them the proper information. And David said to him, canst thou bring me down to this company? And he said, swear unto me by God that thou will not kill me, nor deliver me into the hands of my master, and I'll bring you anywhere you want. And we had brought him down. Behold, they were spread abroad all the earth, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil. David and his men are running for their lives and are in captivities, and they still have great spoil. And these guys came and took all that great spoil. God took care of his people that they had taken out of the land of the Philistines, out of the land of Judah. And David smote them from the twilight even unto the evening of the next day. And there escaped not a man of them, except 400 young men which rode away on camels and fled. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away. And David rescued his two wives, my hero. And there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters. Please, take my 3-year-old. Nope, sorry. Nothing was lacking, sons or daughters. Neither spoil nor anything that had been taken to them. David had recovered all. And David took all the flocks and the herds which they drove before those other cattle and said, this is David's spoil. Well, why not? After everything he'd gone through? And then David came back to the 200 men, which were so faint that they could not follow David, whom they had made also to abide at the brook Bezor. And they went forth to meet David and to meet him with them. And when David came near to the people, he saluted them. Now look at this. Then answered all the wicked men and men of Belial. So out of David's 400 men, there were wicked men and men of Belial with him. Of those that went with David. And those people, the loving, kind, generous, giving, God-fearing people they are, said, because they went not with us, we're not going to give them anything. Only You know, we're not going to give them any of the spoil that we've recovered. We'll just give every man their wife and children back. That's it. They can take their wife and children and leave them, and we're going to keep all the spoil. Let's see what David says to that. Then said David, "You shall not do so, my brethren, with that which the Lord has given us." Again, he's giving God the credit for everything. "The Lord who has preserved us, the Lord who's delivered the company that came against us into our hand. For who will hearken unto you in this manner? But as his part is that goeth down to the battle, so shall his part be that tarrieth by the stuff. They shall part alike." And it was so from that day forward that he made a statute and an ordinance for Israel unto this day. So David's going to establish a new law in the kingdom saying, you need to give. It's really good to give. And when David came to Ziklag, he sent of the spoil. Look at this. David comes back to Ziklag. He's now going to send of the spoil unto the elders of Judah, even to his friends, and said, "Behold, a present for you of the spoil of the enemies of me." No, the enemies of the Lord. All right. After establishing this new law to giving, he illustrates it by sending some of the plunder unto his friends, unto his countrymen, unto his allies, telling them it was a gift from him of the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. He viewed the elders of Judah as his friends and allies. Although this was a nice political move to take care of his friends, it was very indicative of the giving heart of David. He had plenty of bounty from the raid, so why not share it? All right, let's go back to Saul. Chapter 31, verse 1. Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan. And Abinadab, that was the second son, and this the third son, Saul's sons. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. Then said Saul unto his armor bearer, "Draw thy sword, thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me." For his armor bearer would not, because he was really afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together. Jonathan died also, along with two of his brothers. Saul's disobedience led to their death. A father's responsibility is to protect his children. And because of the way what he did, unfortunately, it went to his children, it affected his children too. 31:7. And the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley, and they that were on the other side Jordan, saw that the men of Israel fled, and that Saul and the sons were dead. They forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. And it came to pass on the morrow, and the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. And they cut off Saul's head, stripped off his armor, and sent into the land of the Philistines round about, to publish it in the house of their idols, and among the people. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshean. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead heard of that, which the Philistines had done to Saul. Okay, the book of 1 Chronicles will illustrate the spiritual forces which brought on Saul's wretched end. 1 Chronicles 10:12. You have this in your syllabus?
Yep.
Okay, let's read this. Okay, they arose, all the valiant men, and took away the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons, and brought them to Jabesh, and buried their bones under the oak in Jabesh, and fasted 7 days. So Saul died. Why did Saul die? For his transgression which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, for disobeying the word of the Lord, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit. There was a spiritual reason behind the fact that Saul died, to inquire of it. And he didn't inquire of the Lord. Therefore, he slew him and turned the kingdom unto David, the son of Jesse. Okay. From the senses point of view, Saul dies because he was shot with an arrow and then impaled himself on a sword. From a spiritual point of view, Saul died because of his transgressions, which included his visit to the psychic to gain information. This was against the spiritual laws of God. This was disobedience to God. His seeking aid from another god led to his inglorious death. In our earthly life, all of us are aware that viewpoints on a given situation vary with each observer. The eye of each beholder sees and then interprets an event according to their values, preconceived ideas, and previous experiences. Thus, each person's point of view differs at least somewhat from another person's. The Bible shows us that this is not only true of humans. God's viewpoint, however, is omniscient, all-knowing. The books of Samuel and Kings are written from a human viewpoint, man's point of view. The books of Chronicles, on the other hand, are written from God's point of view, from the vantage point of spiritual power. Man's point of view will simplify life to apparent, overt actions. But God, understanding the spiritual forces at work in the world, goes beneath the surface and points out the spiritual aspects which brings about man's destiny. When David hears that Saul and Jonathan are dead, he reacts with anguish. 2 Samuel 1:11. Then David took hold of his clothes and he rent them, and likewise all the men that were with him, and they mourned and wept and fasted until even for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord, and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword. Now, verse 17. And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan, his son. Then David kills the man who claimed he had slain Saul. And then he gives a wonderful eulogy. Basically, the people thought, oh, you know, we killed Saul. We'll go collect the reward. David will really honor us. Yeah, right. David said, oh, you think you did, huh? Off with their heads. You killed an innocent man. What's wrong with you? That's taking credit for something you didn't do, but David didn't know that at the time. Okay. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 19. He's going to give this wonderful eulogy. The beauty of Israel is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath. Publish it not in the streets of Ascalon. Lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice. Lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph, you mourners of Gilboa. Let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away, the shield of Saul, as though he had been anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with other delights, who put ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thy high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How are the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished?